Babadoo, babadoo.
Hi, I'm Rachel and welcome to the third Feeding Curiosity podcast. So I am delighted to introduce our guest today, Edwina Kennedy, and she is a registered paediatrician and a dietitian behind the amazing business My Little Eater. With over 11 years of experience in the world of paediatric nutrition and feeding, she's helped thousands of parents through her online courses. So Edwina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and why baby feeding is a topic so close to your heart?
Yes, so I am first and foremost a mom of two boys that are now, oh my goodness, I can never remember, 12 and 13 years old. So I have been through the full gamut of experiences when it comes to feeding them as babies and toddlers and school age kids. And I have been through the stressors and I have been through kind of all of that, you know, very crazy world of navigating the world of feeding. And I also think parenting as well, which goes hand in hand at mealtimes with, you know, trying to teach them basically how to eat. I'm also a registered dietitian, and pediatrics is my specialty. And I actually started that when my kids started entering their picky eating phase. I almost feel like I tell this to parents all the time that generally most kids are going to enter some type of phase where they're not loving food as much as they used to. But for my boys, it went from them eating everything under the sun to overnight one day they just decided they only wanted chicken nuggets and fries and pizza, and that was it. And of course, what one boy does, the other follows, right? So that was the time when I started really delving into the research behind, you know, what do you do for picky eaters, but also like how do you prevent picky eating. And I quickly realized that even through all of my training as a dietitian, I had never been told what I was supposed to do in terms of how to get them to eat. I knew everything in terms of what to feed them. I knew how many milligrams of iron they needed, and I knew how much calcium they needed, and I knew how many, you know, meals per day they needed and all that kind of thing, but I had no idea how to get it into them. And so I was like, wow, this is a huge gap. I spent about 2 years researching, taking courses, testing and implementing things on my kids, and really trying to sift through the plethora of information that's out there, because the research is vast and yet it's also not specific and it's not laid out in a way that's easy to understand or know what order to do things or even how to take that kind of theoretical stuff and make it more practical. So that's kind of what I set out to do. Lo and behold, you know, a few months into doing this, I started seeing massive changes with my kids. I started implementing it on my clients, and I've developed programs since then that actually helps give parents that confidence that I ended up getting through this process. So I've got courses for parents who are feeding babies 6 months to 12 months of age, starting solids and introducing finger foods, introducing purees. I've also got courses, of course, for parents of toddlers and even up to school age kids. So ages 1 to 8, I would say, just learning how to prevent and manage picky eating and just raise a healthy, happy eater.
Yeah, and I think, as you know, my children are now 11, and that resonates with me so much, because I kind of think the things that I've learned, you know, since I started the journey with Vividoo, and what I've learned probably more so over the last few years is actually how much I wish I'd known when I was younger. So I'm so happy that we're having this conversation, because, you know, it should really help our audience, you know, kind of bypass some of the problems that you and I have sort of stumbled into along our journeys, which is probably why we are now having this conversation. Mm-hmm. So can I just kick off with the very first question, which is, can you explain just sort of the difference then between baby-led weaning, which we discussed in our last podcast, and more so what you're sort of describing, which is sort of baby-led feeding, mm-hmm. and how does that differ?
Yeah, such a great, great question, because those two terms are often used interchangeably online. And really, I've made it a point to kind of create this distinction in between baby-led feeding, baby-led weaning. Baby-led feeding is something that I started, that I basically did with my kids. And that was something that I did intuitively. That was something that I did because at that point, I had all the confidence in the world. And I was like, I'm just going to watch my baby and see what they need and see what, you know, cues they're giving me. And I'm going to react and I'm going to challenge them. And I wanted them to eat a whole bunch of different foods. And so I kind of started this process, which was a mix between purees and finger foods as needed and as it made sense for my child. Baby-led weaning, to kind of put it simply, and I know you've talked about this before, but it's essentially that, you know, the method of starting solids where you're offering your baby whole pieces of food. So maybe they're finger food pieces or just food that looks more like not mushed, basically, that your baby can hold on to and feed themselves, which is an amazing premise. It is absolutely, you know, been shown and grown in popularity to have so many amazing benefits. And what I've experienced over the years and through my practice is that it's also a very scary thing for a lot of parents. You know, we often, you know, I talk to parents every single day who are saying to me, okay, my baby went from drinking pure milk and only very thin liquids, and all of a sudden I'm expected to give them, you know, a chicken drumstick, or I'm expected to give them a piece of toast, or, you know, I'm supposed to give them a whole piece of mango. Like, I don't understand how that's supposed to work. And even when you explain to me all the benefits, it's terrifying. And yeah. So what baby-led feeding is basically allowing parents and the babies to start wherever the baby and the parent is showing they are ready, wherever the baby's cues kind of like lead, you know, the process, based on your baby's skills, right? And also based on your baby's level of independence. Because you see babies at 6 months of age, which is the time that we generally recommend to start solids, some babies are ready to dive in. They want to grab that whole food. They want to put it in their mouth. They want to explore it. And that's amazing. And some parents are so ready to dive in as well. And they're like, give them all the food. This is the best thing in the world. But on the other hand, you have so many babies who are really hesitant or don't know what to do, or don't like putting things in their mouth, or maybe just really it takes them time to warm up to it. And I would say probably 50% of the kids that I see in my practice, a lot of them don't really want to pick food up and put that in their mouth until closer to 8 months of age, right? And then same thing, I have parents who are just, again, scared. Maybe they feel like they just want to kind of ease into the process. Maybe there's other people feeding their babies. They don't feel comfortable with letting them kind of give them whole foods at, you know, from the beginning. And so I like to say, you know what, whatever method is working for you, you go ahead and you start that way. And the only thing that we want to see is that you're progressing along from there, right? So you watch your baby. Every single baby is different. Every single parent's different. You start where you want, and then you just move them along in textures. You start to develop their sense of independence at mealtimes. Allow them to start self-feeding when they're ready, right? And that's going to basically get you to the point that, you know, where the research says they need to be in order to, you know, prevent picky eating and be able to learn how to eat on their own and that kind of thing. So I think when a lot of people talk about, you know, the benefits of baby-led weaning over, you know, puree feeding, they often think, well, you know, with puree feeding, you've got a lot of pushiness happening. You've got parents who are shoving the spoon in their baby's mouth, or you've got parents who are forcing a specific amount of food. They want to finish a whole jar of baby food, for example. Or you've got parents who are holding their baby's hands down and not letting them explore the food or grab the spoon. And yes, when you do things like that, there are some, you know, I would say kind of lack of opportunities for your baby to develop in skills. And so we do see a benefit baby-led weaning, you know, in comparison. But that doesn't mean that's the way it has to be. You can start with purees. And again, listening to what your baby wants and following that dance and kind of like basically allowing your baby to pick that spoon up if they want to pick it up, or dip their fingers in that puree if they want to do that. And again, gain those benefits of, you know, independence, and graduating in textures little by little, so that they, again, are doing what works for them and for the parent without having to stress themselves out, that they're doing something wrong if they don't start that way from the beginning.
Yeah. And I really like that in terms of having a a sort of a staged process, because I know for my daughters in particular, they were quite slow, they're very premature, so their development was it was quite delayed, and actually at 6 months they couldn't pick up a carrot, so I had to feed them on a spoon or whatever it might have been, because they just weren't ready to pick it up. So mm-hmm. I really love that sort of looking at your baby's cues, and I think that's somewhere where parents don't always have that intuitively. I certainly didn't.
No.
So could you just sort of break down sort of, you know, what are those cues that we might be looking for sort of, you know, in a really simple way that parents can just remember those, you know, what are those cues that we look at to really sort of put it in a nutshell?
Yeah, well, in terms of cues to start solids in general, I'm just going to skim over that really quickly, but I just want to make sure parents know that the cues to start with purees and the cues to start with finger foods are actually pretty close, if not the exact same. So we want babies to be able to, first and foremost, from a safety perspective, they need to be sitting upright, have good head and neck control, and be able to reach forward and have that good core support, right? When they're sitting in the high chair, they're not slumping to the side, and they could reach forward if they wanted to, because that's one of the things that might indicate, hey, my baby wants to grab that finger food, or my baby wants to grab that spoon. Do they have that ability to kind of, do they have room? Do they have the core support to like grab that if they wanted to? And if so, let me watch for that. And when they do, let me offer them that spoon, or let me offer them that finger food, right? So that's a cue for sure to look for. Of course, we want babies to be able to actually have food in their mouth. So the tongue thrust reflex needs to be diminished somewhat so that when they put food in their mouth, it stays there. Maybe they can close their lips around a spoon, or they can kind of hold a piece of food in their mouth. But also, you're not shoveling that spoon in, you're not wrestling with their tongue, trying to get it in past that gag reflex, because that makes it, again, a little bit more of an unpleasant experience, whereas we really want it to be baby-led, and we really want your baby to be able to just voluntarily put that food in their mouth. So when you see your baby, a cue, you know, wanting to let's say go for the food, they're going to lean forward. They're going to open their mouth. You know, you're going to obviously respond by putting food either in their mouth if it's a spoon and you're feeding them, or again, giving them that food in their hand. That would be another cue you'd look for. You know, is your baby reaching and grabbing? Can they wrap their hand around that piece of food? Whereas maybe you see a baby who's kind of, again, totally uninterested. That finger food's there and you're modeling and you're showing them what to do and they just don't really want to pick it up. That's also fine. I would read that as a cue saying, I'm not ready for this. That doesn't mean I'm not ready for solids, but I don't feel like picking this up. That doesn't mean I'm not going to offer them the meal. It doesn't mean I'm not going to introduce allergens. It doesn't mean I'm not going to try and get iron into them. I'm going to feed the way that they want to feed to start, right? And then gently nudge them from there. So I would say those are some of the main cues. And then the last ones I want to touch on is definitely hunger and fullness cues as well. So, you know, again, when I think about puree feeding and usually the cons that people associate with puree feeding, they will often say, again, they're overfed, parents are feeding them according to a predetermined amount, and baby-led feeding eliminates that because you're letting baby just eat as much as they want and stop when they want. So the last cues that you want to look for also are just hunger and fullness cues. Those are actually very, very important because, again, when you think about how typical baby-led weaning only proponents may talk about puree feeding, they will often say, again, they are being overfed, or that parents are feeding them a predetermined amount, and that, you know, with baby-led weaning, because they are self-feeding, they are choosing how much to eat, and that's why it's healthier and that's why it's better. But you can, of course, do puree feeding by watching your baby's cues to see, do they want more food? Are they done their meal even after only two bites, or do they want, you know, two bowls worth of that food? As long as you are responding to your baby maybe leaning in, opening their mouth, or maybe turning away, saying they don't want the food, or swatting the spoon away, or swatting that food away, those are the things that you can do to be responsive even when you're puree feeding, so that you eliminate any of those cons. And again, you're just doing what works for you and your baby. So those are, yeah, those are the main cues to look for.
And could you just mention a little bit about sort of those, the oral motor skills, because I think that's something that I didn't understand at all, but it's so crucial for babies learning to eat, and what we can do to help babies develop those skills, because it's, again, it's not something that they know naturally.
Oh, 100%. So oral motor skills are something I love talking about, because when we talk about kind of, yes, we talk about babies gaining independence and again, eating how much they want, but the ability to actually chew food, to put food in their mouth, hold it in their mouth, to move it side to side, move it front to back, use their jaws, use their tongue, you know, swallow a bolus. All of those are what we call oral motor skills. And in order to develop those, really the only way is via practice. So again, in, you know, traditional sense of puree feeding, we have had a lot of, I would say, delays happening in those oral motor skills because parents start with purees, which is awesome, but they maybe are just really too scared and then they never really progress them, or it takes a very long time and babies aren't getting any table foods or more chewy foods or more stringy foods or whatever until maybe 11 months, 12 months of age. Some kids I see are, you know, 14, 15, 16, 18 months of age, and they're still on extremely soft foods. Maybe pastas is the most advanced thing. Whereas we have, you know, resistive foods that we want to give our baby, where it's like even the bone of a drumstick, or maybe the pit of a mango, or like a spare rib, where you could put that in your baby's mouth, or your baby would put it in their mouth, and they could just gnaw on it and just wrap their tongue around it and go again left to right and put some kind of that proprioceptive pressure, which helps them learn, you know, how much do I need to bite into a food? And if I do it on a hard one, how much do I need to do it? And if I do it on with a soft one, how much do I need to do that? If you give your baby lumpy textures, that's going to help teach them how to kind of mash that food with their tongue. So even when they don't have teeth, which by the way are totally not required for those advanced textures and finger foods, they can figure out exactly what to do via experience, right? So we want to be able to, again, like I said in the beginning with baby-led feeding, part of it is advancing your baby. So we never want to get stuck with just, you know, one simple phase, whether it's simple, thin, non-lumpy purees or simple, easy to chew, meltable solids, right? Because like sometimes we have the puffs, or sometimes we're giving them only bananas and avocado and sweet potato, but we don't progress them from there. So watch their cues, watch to see how they start to go up and down with their mouth, right? That's one of the first thing, that munching motion. And I actually know you guys have an amazing book. I love it so much that I encourage parents to read, and you know, even to their young 6 month old, and model and play the sounds for like, what is it like when you munch up and down or chew, you know, and like really make that sound. Or when they're learning how to drink, you know, using that oral motor skill to drink out of a straw and slurp up, which again, I know the book like gives like little examples. I love that so much. So practice modeling and encouraging your baby to progress in texture so that they get more and more of that practice is exactly what we need to see in order for babies to develop and master those oral motor skills. And that's ultimately going to help prevent picky eating and food aversions down the road.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason for the book development from my perspective is that sometimes a meal is quite a pressurized environment for both parents and babies. And actually by having a book that you can do in a different setting, perhaps, is a way of just actually like, let's just play the game of making those fun sounds and fun noises, that you can play that with your baby, and then you're still practicing, but you're not doing it under the pressure of necessarily sitting at a meal every time you do it. But yeah, the more opportunities to practice in the day, the as those skills will build and develop. So you know, for me, that was quite an important thing for us to be able to provide when teaching babies to eat.
I love that. Yeah.
Can I just now sort of ask you, I know you've sort of mentioned about progressing onto textures, and so could you just explain a little bit about sort of what you mean by sort of a texture timeline, and why is that important, and how does it work? So just if you could give us a little bit of insight into that would be great.
Of course. So part of my baby-led feeding method, and what I teach heavily inside of my baby-led feeding course, is this concept of a texture timeline, which is a signature tool that I created to help, again, those parents to continually advance their baby in textures. You know, start wherever, again, they feel comfortable starting, or where their baby shows they're ready, but to continually nudging them and advancing them little by little in sort of a sequential manner. So the timeline is actually divided into three phases, but technically there's like a fourth one there. So we've got a phase zero, one, two, and three. Phase zero is really an optional phase. It's those extremely thin, smooth purees. So thinking of the texture of applesauce, which is slightly thicker than breast milk or formula, but really the oral motor skill that's required there is just still a simple swallow, right? So you could put that, you know, it goes on your baby's tongue, no matter where it lands, it's just a swallow, right? That's required. And that's nice for parents who are, again, extremely terrified, or who just want to make sure, you know what, my baby has a safe swallow, or you know what, I just want to give them a few flavors to start with, and let's just get them used to sitting there at mealtime and just sitting in a high chair and understanding that, like, you can put these things in your mouth and just easing into it, right? So that's our phase zero of
this. Everything's new. Everything they're doing is new. And I think sometimes we forget that as adults. We've been eating and trying flavors and sitting in this. Like, everything is new. So it's a lot for a baby to learn in a short period of time. So I really like that sort of starting at the beginning and make it simple.
100%. You're so right. And again, for some babies, like, sensory experiences are very overwhelming, or some babies with developmental delays need to establish that safe swallow. So phase zero is for those kinds of situations. Then we have phase one. Phase one is where we have kind of thick and creamy purees if you're going the puree route, or you would have, again, kind of thick and creamy, soft finger foods. So this is where you would see things like the sweet potato and the avocado and the banana. And usually these are the foods most parents, whether, again, starting baby-led weaning or not, are most comfortable with offering. You could mash them up so that they're still thick and creamy, but they're just, you know, able to put it on a spoon and they can offer it to their baby to grab the spoon and self-feed. Or if they wanted to feed their baby with the spoon, they can as well. And actually, you guys also have these dippers, which I love, because these are so good for phase one foods or even phase zero, right? When you have that, again, kind of, we have two ends, you could put any kind of puree on the end of this and it'll stick on really easily. And then your baby can just kind of fumble around and just, you know, practice getting it in their mouth. Or if they could, or you could kind of balance some purees on here, or if it was a thicker puree, it could stay on there. And then allowing baby to put that in their mouth, hold on to the little handles, or, you know, just however they want to grab it. There's no perfection here. It's really just about getting them, again, more used to using utensils, using their hands, and experiencing those textures. Then from
kind of confidence and developing skills.
100%.
However they are ready to do it, yeah.
100%. And this really is, I'm glad you mentioned confidence. It's all about building confidence for you and for the baby. I'm going to talk about gagging in a little bit. I'm sure it's going to come up, but that's always the number one fear, right? And choking, of course, for parents. And so moving your baby through these stages in a sequential manner gives you that confidence to say, hey, okay, I can see that they can handle phase one foods pretty well. And there's some gagging, but it's minimal. It's not disruptive to the meal. I'm getting used to it little by little. And at least if they're gagging, they're not gagging on shreds of chicken, they're gagging on avocado. So I'm like, the chances that they're going to choke on that are really low. So maybe I can, like, calm my nerves a bit. And, you know, again, build that confidence. Do that for a period, a short period of time. In the timeline, I actually give some suggestions for lengths of time to spend, because again, I don't want anyone getting stuck there. So I would say 1 to 2 weeks, you know, as little, you could even do as little as one meal. If you feel like, yep, I'm fine, I want to move on, you can. But if you really want to give yourself some time, give yourself a couple weeks. You know, your baby's not going to be delayed by just waiting a couple weeks on those textures. You know, give that yourself that time to build that confidence, your baby to learn what to do. And then you're like, okay, I see that they're doing this. I see that they're swallowing. I see that they understand, like, they're getting the hang of things. Again, there's no serious issues with coughing or vomiting or, of course, no choking. So I'm ready to move on, right? And that's when you move to phase two of the timeline. These foods are more minced or lumpy textures. These are the foods that ideally we want our babies to be experiencing somewhere, you know, around 9 months of age or earlier. The reason for this is there is research that shows that babies who have been exposed to these textures, again, around this time, before or around 9 months of age, have had way decreased difficulties with eating later. They followed them at like 18 months and 7 years of age. And just, again, that ability to develop those oral motor skills in time so that they're a little bit more advanced before they hit that picky eating stage, you know, when they're around 12 months of age. That's kind of the goal behind that. So again, lumpy textures, you might do oatmeal, you might do some, you know, quartered blueberries in there or just on its own. You might do a fish cake or a bean kind of patty or bean burger, something that's soft. Again, it's not going to require rotary chews or heavy, heavy chewing or pulling off pieces with like their teeth or anything like that, or with their gums. It's really still mashing, but it's going to be managing a little bit more of a solid and multiple textures, maybe a little bit happening in their mouth. That's going to help, again, build your confidence, build their skills, practice a little bit more on there. Maybe give yourself a month on those. That's totally fine. And then you're like, okay, I'm ready, or I got to nudge myself a little bit too, and we're going to move them on to phase three. Phase three is honestly just an expansion of textures, because I mentioned before, sometimes we have people who, and it's so like normal, it's just, we're not told this kind of thing that, you know, we're giving them the pasta or we're giving them the banana and the sweet potato and we're like, oh my God, my kid's eating all these foods. They're eating finger foods. They're self-feeding. Yay, this is amazing. And it is amazing. But at some point, we want them to experience what it's like to, you know, try a crispy or a crumbly texture or a spongy texture like a mushroom or tofu, or maybe, you know, I'm trying to think, like a stringy texture like pulled chicken, or even the like, you know, roasted asparagus. You pull it apart and it kind of has that stringy texture, or grainy like rice, you know, those little particles, or couscous or quinoa all over their tongue. That's a skill. That's an experience we really want them to experience early on, if possible, and often as much as we can, so that they really hone in on their skills, develop their food preferences in that kind of sensitive period between 6 and 9 months, 10 months of age, maybe max. And then again, reducing the risk for picky eating later. So essentially that's the timeline. Gives you suggestions for all types of foods that fall within each phase category, and is really, really, really helpful no matter how you're starting purees or finger foods to help, you know, advance your baby.
Yeah, and actually, as you know, I don't know whether I told you this, but my former career as a dentist, you know, baby's teeth are not usually erupted by 12 months of age. Mm. You know, a few teeth may have come through, so they are still relying very much on that ability to mash food and move it around their mouth, rather than, you know, when we get our teeth, that provides an awful lot of force when we bite and chew, which babies still can't generate. So having that muscle control in their mouth is so important for them to be able to do that. So I think that's amazing. So when you've got parents that say they've already either sort of gone down one road or another, say purely purees or purely baby-led weaning, can they mix and match? You know, I think that's a lot of parents feel, if they've started or embarked on one journey, how do they, if they want to dial it back, is that hard, or do we just go for it?
You know what? Sometimes we overcomplicate things, and you can totally go for it. You know, I've seen things floating around on social media before saying, you know, if your baby's eating finger foods and they're going to not be able to go back, or if they're eating purees, they're going to choke on finger foods. There's no rhyme or reason for any of that. Your baby, if you think about naturally, we have naturally pureed foods, even though we're eating like solid table foods, right? We eat hummus, we eat yogurt, you know, we eat the applesauce, we have the oatmeal. Those are all pureed textures, right? We can easily manage them all within one meal, and your baby can do the exact same thing. And that's, again, part of that practice. They put it in their mouth. That sensory input goes to their brain and they think, okay, this is soft. This kind of flattens over my tongue. It's not a hard, you know, kind of, what do you call it? Like a hard texture that I need to bite down on to break apart. And they get that input and then they figure out, okay, this is what I need to do because I've had this experience before, or I'm learning what to do. So mixing and matching is totally fine. It allows you more flexibility as a parent as well, right? And if you ever wanted to jump around, so going back to the timeline, if your baby's on phase three foods, you can go back to phase zero. If your baby's on phase one and you feel comfortable, jump to phase two. And that could be within one day, right? So it is about, ultimately, I want expansion of textures. I want expansion of foods and flavors and different types. There's no need to ever feel stuck on one, because it's just holding them back, really, from more and more variety.
Yeah, no, I really love that. And I think I wish, that's something I wish I'd known, because I think probably I didn't do that as much as I probably should have, and it's, I think it all boils down to confidence. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of leads into the next question. I know that, you know, a lot of parents feel such a huge, an enormous amount of pressure to create the perfect mealtime for their babies, and they put themselves under a huge amount of pressure. So do you have any tips on how do we combat that? How do we sort of just, you know, dial the stress levels down for parents?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things, honestly, is to think about the purpose of mealtime, and especially in those early months, 6 to 9 months of age, that period really is about exploring and about learning and about playing with food and about loving mealtimes. And it's not so much about getting calories in. It's not so much about being able to eat the most advanced food in the world or else my baby's going to be picky. It's just about exploring it. So if you kind of go into mealtimes with that main goal, is my baby, you know, interacting and just kind of enjoying being there, you know? Am I not concerned about whether they get 2 tablespoons or 1 tablespoon or 8 tablespoons or 10 tablespoons? Let me just let go of that responsibility because they know their body, right? We have to go back to trusting them, just like when they drink their breast milk or formula, you know, even exclusively before 6 months. We always trusted them to say, okay, they know how much they need to eat. They know when to start and stop. That's a very natural ability they have. We want to carry that exact same thing over to mealtimes with solids. They know what they need to eat. And not every single time it's going to be the exact same amount. You know, they might be sick one day. They might not, you know, have been full or they're not going through a growth spurt or whatever it is. So let them lead the way. You go in and just enjoy your time. Have some kind of, I love to kind of think of it as just family time. Mealtime is really like another opportunity, a different way of spending time with your baby. Let's sit down together. Let's face each other. Let's smile. Let's laugh. Let's talk. I think talking with your baby is amazing, even if they can't talk back, you know? Here's what we're going to do after we finish lunch. And oh my goodness, I love this color orange of the carrot or whatever it is that you want to say. Speaking, modeling, and eating with them and just truly trying to keep it pleasant and stress-free with no real agenda of how much they're eating or what they're eating is probably the best tip I have.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I'm sure other people, is you have, you're so worried about them getting the nutrition in that you kind of forget about the actual emotional experience and bonding experience. And it's just sort of redressing that balance, which I think is great. So do you have any sort of top tips about parents, what parents shouldn't be doing? Like, what are the things that you see that notoriously you're like, oh no, change that?
Honestly, this is going to sound very simple, but the biggest thing that I see, whether baby-led feeding or baby-led weaning, I should say, or puree feeding, is that parents often will put the food in front of their child, and then they're off to the kitchen and they're tending to the dishes or they're making more food or they're eating their own food somewhere. Like, they're just doing something else, on maybe on their phone. And I totally understand. Not every time it's going to be perfectly easy. But I encourage parents to sit down with their baby. Slow meal times down. And again, make it that engaging kind of social event that it is. What I see is, like, I get messages all the time. My baby's 9 months. My baby's 10 months. They're not eating. They're not interested. I've been trying since 6 months of age. I don't know what to do. I'm at the point where I'm actually worried now. And I always, my number one question, maybe two questions. One is, are they full on milk? And then two, are you sitting down and eating with them? Because they need to see that experience. They need to see you model, you know, what it looks like to drink, to eat, to use your utensil, to chew, and again, to just be present at the table in front of their food. So it's very, very overlooked, and I know it seems very minor, but I'm telling you, it makes a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's an assumption that we all have, that they innately know what to do, and actually we forget how much babies, you know, everything is new, like every day. That's why they have like big eyes, don't they, babies? Mm-hmm. They take it all in, and a mealtime is such a great learning experience for babies, and as a parent, you are absolutely their first teacher, so that they look to you for everything. So I think that's, you know, such a useful tip that I think I agree. It's often something that I think parents don't necessarily value, actually how much input they have to their children's development, whether they realise it or not. So what is your top tip? So we ask this to all our guests. What is your top tip to make mealtime adventures more fun for both parents of babies. And I think you kind of alluded to it a little bit, but mm-hmm. there's always a nice way to make mealtimes fun.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I agree. Like I did talk a little bit about it, and it's really just kind of, you know, making it a family experience. But I also think I want to add, allowing a little bit of mess and allowing a little bit of food play is also what makes it not only helpful for the baby, because they get to explore the food on a sensory level, which we know, again, from research is very important for preventing picky eating, and really helping them become comfortable with all the different types of foods, even if they're not ready to eat it yet. Smelling it and touching it and feeling what it's like on their fingers, on their, you know, cheeks, on their arms. That's, I mean, babies are very, they're play based, right? Everything they learn, everything they do is learning through play. Same thing with toddlers. So I think allowing, you know, a little bit of that messy play, even though I know it sometimes it's anxiety provoking and you're like, oh my God, the mess. I get it. But maybe once a day, maybe before bath time, maybe it's even a couple, you know, every second day, something that you can do to just let go. Let it be messy, let them explore and have fun, you know, play games with them. Like, oh my goodness, you know, on guard, like you got your green beans and you're like playing with them and kind of, or you're just letting them, you know, who's squishing it the most, or who's crunching the loudest, or there's a whole bunch of little silly things that you can do. Again, that involves food play, that I really, really think makes it so fun. And again, is equally beneficial for the child for preventing and overcoming picky eating.
Yeah, and I really love that. And you know, this is like product plug, but obviously your coverall, actually yeah. that takes a lot of the stress. And
yes.
That's your way of like, you know, dealing with that mess. And for me, that was a really, that was actually a byproduct of when I developed the coverall. For me, I'd really, you know, it was a kind of a selfish, I don't want to deal with the mess. But yeah. actually the minute they were wearing the coverall, then suddenly the exploration can go to a whole different level. And yes. I was suddenly relaxed. And
yes.
I thought, oh my God, the benefit actually for my baby is almost bigger than the benefit for me. And that was a really nice realization. So that's really lovely to hear that that is something that
yeah.
you know, you think helps.
The coverall is my absolute favorite. I recommend it to everybody. I put it as a recommendation in my course. You're right. I forgot to mention that because I'm like, honestly, there's no excuses. It's like all arms. It covers like in between the high chair. And I'm like, you take it off and you're done. And it's funny, just a quick story. My son, my first, like my oldest son, I didn't give him that experience and I didn't know to. And I remember he didn't even like have, I always think back to like, I put him down at the beach and for years, like he'd sit on sand and he'd get that texture, like grainy texture on his arms or on his legs and he would lose it. It was like he couldn't get over it. And it took years. And I'm like, how come my kid doesn't want to go to the beach, doesn't want to yeah. dig in the sand? But I didn't give him any of that sensory exposure, right? And I think, like, again, like maybe it's grains of rice or maybe it's little bits of that couscous on their hands or mixed in with the yogurt or whatever. That really, really helps to, again, make everything so much more comfortable.
I love that. I think my daughters cried the first time I took their socks off and put them on the sand. Yeah. Like, what the heck is this? But they love the beach. So we have some quick fire questions from the audience, Edwina, for you. So are you happy if I sort of just give you some quick fires? So we had a question saying, how do I schedule meals? And how many do I offer and when do I offer them? Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of like a practical question that people sometimes want to know the answer to.
Yeah, 100%. So let's start with by age or by month. Easiest thing to remember. So 6 to about 7 months of age, when they're starting solids, one meal a day is all that's required. If they like it, if you're doing well and you want to up it to two, you most definitely can. But we want to make sure we're balancing their milk intake with their solid food intake. So we don't want to drop that milk intake too much, especially in that first couple of months. Then around 8, 9 months of age, you know, somewhere in between there, you would add in that second meal if you haven't already. For sure, by 9 months, get that third meal in and give them that practice from 9 to 12 months, always on 3 meals a day, lots of feeding opportunities. In terms of breakfast, lunch, supper, how far apart from milk, you could do any meal in the day. It does not matter whether you're doing it breakfast one day, lunch the next day. As you add more meals in, you're going to develop that routine naturally. Obviously, you're going to have one in the morning, midday, and then later. And then you want to make sure that you're scheduling it far away from, or far away enough, if that makes sense, from milk feedings. So we want to give at least 30 minutes after a milk feeding, maybe even up to 60 or 90 minutes, depending on the baby, depending on their age, to get some, you know, develop some hunger. We don't want them too hungry that they're hangry, that they're cranky, that they can't focus, but we want them to have a bit of an appetite. So give it that time. And then again, don't offer milk right away after, especially after they've hit like 8 months, 9 months of age. Give them a little bit of a break, because sometimes, especially I will say for babies who aren't taking to solids well, they will use milk as an immediate backup. I don't want to try that food. I don't want to eat that texture. That's difficult. That's not as easy as milk going in really quickly. So I'm going to just, I know I'm getting my milk 10 minutes later. Wait. Right? So give it a little bit of break, especially as they get a little bit older, or if you see that they're having some trouble with solids.
I think that's really great advice. So the next question was, how long do I need to wait before I introduce a new food? I think that's something that we all worry about.
Yes. Okay. So we have this, really it's in most of the major regulatory body guidelines, this kind of rule that we wait, you know, 2 to 3 days, some places say 3 to 5 days between introducing new foods. But I really, really want to say that if you look at any research, if you look at the reasoning behind this, there is no valid reason for having to wait this amount of time. And I'm talking for foods that are non-highly allergenic foods. So there's a list of about 8 foods that we know are highly allergenic, do have a high risk for a reaction. Those are the foods you want to wait, and literally it's a couple days in between. Because if a reaction's going to happen, it's going to happen within that first 24 hours. And then maybe the second day, that's all you need to, that's like literally you're being safe. For everything else, if you're introducing chicken or you're introducing rice or, you know, any of those non-highly allergenic foods, the chances your child is going to have a reaction to them is ridiculously low. And so we're unnecessarily kind of bypassing, again, all these opportunities for variety and flavor and texture exposure. And if you think about how many foods they would get if you were waiting 3 to 5 days in between every single one, I mean, they're getting probably 50 foods by the time they're 1 year of age, where they should be at least 100, 150 foods. Like, I don't want to give a specific number, but we really want a huge kind of as much variety as possible. So basically, my advice is only for those highly allergenic foods do you want to wait a couple days. Other than that, go ahead and introduce, you know, any food in any order, and one after the other is totally fine.
That's really helpful. Okay, so any top tips for ideas for baby-led feeding on the go, especially with summer and people will be out and about picnicking and all the rest of it. Any good ideas, any recipe that you've got that you want to share?
Yeah, actually, I would say for travel and especially in the summertime, I think making it as simple as possible is the best thing you can do. So open up your pantry, open up your freezer, take whatever whole foods you can kind of easily grab and go with. So I love, personally, canned beans, canned chickpeas. Give them a little rinse. If you can buy no salt added, that's better. If not, rinse it a few times to reduce some of the salt. And you can literally take that in Tupperware. It doesn't need to be cold. It doesn't need to be hot. And you can, you know, feed them at the park. You could feed them at the pool. It's really mess-free. There's no sauces. And we didn't have a recipe, but it's high protein. It's high fiber. It's got iron in it. And so it really doesn't feel like a meal. But in terms of like what purpose it's giving a lot of nutrition. And again, it's really easy. You might want to pair that with like, you know, maybe some quarter, like some berries I find is really easy just to wash and then pack. Obviously banana comes in its own package, but I just love focusing on the whole foods for travel. Of course you can do a recipe, but you know, it's going to mean like packing it in a thermos or adding all these, you know, ice packs, or maybe like having a spoon and a utensil and having to sit them down and do the bib and do the high chair. Like, it's an ordeal, right? So I love those. And I also think like if you open your freezer, take out frozen peas, frozen corn, if you wanted to add that like as your produce, they will thaw, you know, in a couple hours, especially if you're out on the go. So you can just literally throw them in a container and go. And then that's your produce, right? To add to that meal. So cheese slices, that kind of thing.
Yeah, great. Oh, I mean, this has been lovely. We're getting to the end. So our final question is, I know that most pets rarely have time to have a hot drink, but with our brand new mug that we have, our Feeding Curiosity mug for the podcast, what would your choice of bigger brew be?
Honestly, I've been obsessed with coffee lately, and I never used to be like this, but
Oh,
I
really?
used to have a quarter of a cup and I would be wired for the day, like jittery, like I couldn't handle it. And but I always loved the smell, I always loved the idea of it. So I would have like again, quarter of a cup every morning, and I don't know what's happened this past year. I've just built up this tolerance and now I'm trying to hold myself back. So coffee all day, every day, an espresso or Americano for sure.
Oh,
Yeah.
wonderful. Edwina, thank you so much. I hope I know your mug is already with you, so I hope you enjoy your coffee out
Thank
of
you.
our Bibidoo mug. Thank you to everyone who's listened. Please check out the full episode on our website, and we'll obviously be breaking it down in some bite-sized chunks for people to look at. It's obviously been uploaded to Apple, Spotify, and Amazon, and keep up to date with all our Instagram and Facebook social posts. As well. Edwina, thank you so much. You've been a fantastic guest and given us some amazing insights, and thank you for your time.
Bibidoo, bibidoo.